Hello, my name is Jaya Ballou. I'm going to talk to you today about lawful interception. Yeah, okay, maybe I'll just sit down. All right. I'll talk to you today about lawful interception of IP traffic, specifically the European context. If I'm talking too fast or you can't hear me, just speak up and I'll try to do better. If you have questions, please feel free to raise your hands. If I think those questions can be reserved for a later time or another slide, I'll let you know. So feel free to ask. By the way, how many of you here work for ISPs? Okay. How many of you have interception equipment in your ISP? You just don't want to talk about that, or?
No money.
No money. Oh, that's a good one. What country is your ISP in? The guy with the red shirt with no money? What country is your ISP in? Germany. And do you know if you have to intercept for legal reasons? I mean, your ISP is not compliant, or? Okay. Let me just repeat what he said. He said that there's not enough money for this purpose. There's money for other things, but there's just not enough money for interception. This is a common story that you'll hear around Europe. And ever since the stipulation has been made that all ISPs and public operations or public communications providers have to provide interception equipment, a lot of those communications providers claim that they cannot do business should they be forced to comply with such a mandate. So this is not just a technical issue and a legal issue. Ultimately, it comes down to a financial issue. So we're going to have all these different things. Are there people in this room that work for ISPs in other countries other than Germany? Well, I know for a fact there's at least one guy here that does that, and he's not raising his hand. So anyway. Okay, so this is basically the way that I'm going to structure my talk. We're going to go through a little introduction of services. For those of you who know, feel free to fall asleep or bug me with annoying questions. Then we're going to talk about actually the interception itself. Then I'm going to bore you with legal stuff for a little while about why it started, the legislation, ETSI. And then we're going to focus on a case study of the Netherlands. How many of you have heard Paul Wouters talk here about a year ago on lawful interception? Okay, great. Okay, well, this will lead off of that, but this is a little more in-depth in the technical side and policy side. And then we're going to talk about interception suppliers and discussions. Everything is protected by NDA, so everything I'm going to tell you, you can also find if you look for it. So there's nothing that I'm telling you now that you can sue me for later, for those of you in the room who want to. ETSI defines lawful interception as something, an action that's performed by a network operator in order to make certain information available to a law enforcement monitoring agency. That's pretty vague. It could be just about anything. It could be your home address. It could be the content of your communications. This definition allows a heck of a lot to go from any operator to the authorities. So the idea that ETSI has is all of the interception is not being done by the police or the Secret Service themselves. The actual interception has to be carried out and delivered by the network operator. This is a different definition than was what was once there and concerning wiretapping and concerning data interception, which is that the authorities would be provided with an interception access point on your network. So you have your own little happy network, and you have your core router, and what you do is, you know, like this, whenever the operator wants to, whenever the LEMF, the law enforcement, wants to, they come on your network. Oh, okay. I have to suck on the microphone now for the people in the back. In any case, the differentiation is that the law enforcement official no longer has full and complete control over the interception that's taking place. That's what the ETSI definition tries to provide for, so that you don't just have an open hole in your network that the law agency, Secret Service, police, etc., is just allowed to stick their tapping equipment on. You don't know what's being intercepted. You don't know if it complies with the law. You have no idea. So this is a subsequent change. So why do we do legal interception? I gave you some ideas here. You know, terrorism, ooh. Pedophilia, because everybody likes some good porn. Cyber stalking, because I know some of you guys have ex-girlfriends that you just don't want to let go of. Those kinds of things are the reasons that the police and the government give you for intercepting. And basically, it's not just that they can prove with any other information that you ever have done any of these things, but on suspicion thereof, these are all valid reasons to conduct wiretaps. Very often, these wiretaps need some sort of law order, you know, like a warrant, in order to execute them. But in most countries in Europe, for things that fall under the first two categories, for suspicion of terrorism or pedophilia, usually you don't need a warrant. Especially after September 11th, people feel very free to execute an intercept order without any judicial or legal basis. Now, this is not true for all countries, but this is the way that the situation has been changing since a year ago. And why not? Why should you not intercept? There's 100 billion reasons if you look at, you know, ECPA or privacy.org. But the biggest reasons are privacy, security. If you also think about it, the security that's being provided or not by the law enforcement agency actually is a weak point. So a relatively okay criminal can hack into the government's ability to intercept. So when they threaten or compromise that network, the whole rest of the system is compromised as well. So you can have the best running ISP in the world, but you can't guarantee your the integrity of your customer's data if that weak point is going to be the LEMF network that you're connecting to. The legal issues in LI. Now, if you talk to anybody who's actually worked in LI, they'll tell you that the biggest fear that they have is actually testifying before any kind of court about the validity of the captured or intercepted data that they have. And primarily because it's not 100% guaranteed to be the truth. I have a little quote for you from Rumpole where the judge asks, "So, am I here to hear the truth?" And the objecting counsel says, "No, your lordship is here to hear the evidence." And that's all it is. And evidence, like all other evidence and all other things, can be tampered with, can be completely tossed out. And basically, the way that you look at if lawful intercept evidence can be considered in court, you can judge it against the standard ways that evidence is judged in court. So is it admissible in a court? So if I wiretap the guy in the front row because he has a scary T-shirt on with, you know, skull and crossbones, what is my basis for interception? Is it admissible? Do I have a legal authority to intercept him in the first place? And it really is different per country. In Germany, you have a bit of a freer law than exists in Europe. I'm sorry, in Europe. Of course, what I think is Europe. In Holland or in the UK. So the UK has more strict ways that evidence can be admitted into court. Is it authentic? Can you actually explicitly link the data that I've intercepted to that particular person? Let's say he gave his laptop to the guy next to him. So, I mean, it's just very simple, basic common sense stuff. But these are all questions that you cannot answer when it comes to non-physical evidence like data. Is it accurate? Can we actually say that there was no man in the middle doing anything with the data that was being transmitted from the user to the law enforcement managed facility? Is it complete? I don't know if you heard the article a few weeks ago, but basically, well, actually it's a few months ago now, there was a case in the Netherlands that actually got some international attention because it was a wiretap of a phone line of a Turkish mafia guy who was a bad, bad man. But in order to prove that he was such a bad guy, they had to tap all his phone records. And there was a problem with the timestamps. So apparently what the police guy did on the other side was he added in the timestamps by hand. That's not allowed. So by doing this, basically the evidence that was collected by the collecting station wasn't complete. It couldn't tell the whole story of the beginning of the call and the end of the call. So it looked like he was on the phone for about 48 hours every single day continuously without hanging up. That's what it looked like. So these are all problems when you're talking about intercept data. And the last thing is it has to be convincing to juries. It has to actually stand the test of, do I believe this? A lot of countries in Europe don't have a jury system. But if we say convincing to juries, then you can say the person who takes over the jury function that can be seen in the U.S. or in the U.K., it's a function that means that someone has to assess the evidence and verify its validity, its authenticity, etc. Can I actually look at this? Does it stand my common sense questions? Is it practical to present to you? And these are all problems with the admissibility of surveillance evidence. The other issue is it's a virtual scene of the crime. So you don't know when it happened, how it happened, etc. It can be replayed. It can be very difficult to actually find the relevant person who is committing the act. So the indelicto flagrante means that you were actually caught red-handed sleeping with the boss's wife, and that's why you're in trouble. And it's very hard to actually find that with lawful interception because, you know, they're not intercepting at the point of actually committing their crime. They're intercepting at any random point for several weeks, hoping that you'll do something really stupid. And then, of course, when we come back to the jury question, how do you handle this kind of evidence? Do you know any lawyers that actually have a clue when it comes to looking at a TSP dump? I mean, juries and lawyers, they cannot make technically intelligent decisions. They can make legally intelligent decisions, maybe, given lots of money and, you know. But they're not really capable of handling this technical data. So how do you handle this expert evidence? Because when you get those experts in the room, they'll tell you, you know, I can't prove that it was this guy. It could have been his sister or his neighbor or the kid down the street that's using his connection to do God knows what because, you know, it's a wireless connection and he doesn't have any security, blah, blah, blah. So you have no way of getting any reasonable expert in their right mind who still wants to keep some credibility to go into a courtroom and say, yep, all of this data that's been intercepted and collected, it's all good. And you also won't get anyone who actually works for an ISP to 100% verify that everything that they're sending that's all over the network is completely kosher. So these are all real problems with handling this surveillance evidence. And one thing that's been decided in the Netherlands is that when you do have this surveillance evidence, it cannot be the sole, flaming bullet? No, smoking gun, that's the word. It can't be the sole smoking gun, so it can't be the only basis to actually get you into prison. There has to be other bad things that they can prove that you've done in order for them to actually handle it in court and for you to be convicted. So what they call it is they call it secondary evidence. And I gave you two examples in the presentation. Primary evidence is actually the evidence that's collected, which is I'm able to prove that the guy in the Skull and Crossbones T-shirts, he actually sent the stuff that he sent, and I can prove that it was complete, and I can that it passes all those tests of admissibility of evidence. I can prove all of that. And the secondary evidence means I can't. There are some reasonable doubt that of all of those factors of evidence that it's not the real original evidence. It is a copy because it's, you know, copied and transferred. So there could be some misrepresentation in the evidence that I'm seeing. Okay, there's more legal boring stuff. Sorry. What do we consider, like, when we talk about this stuff, what do we define as intercepted internet services? We're talking about full access to the internet. So if you're a communications provider that provides any form of access, public access, and it's a service that you provide for money or goods or sex, whatever. So if you have a wireless network at home, no, I'm kidding. But if you are a public communications provider, the idea is that you are providing an internet service and thereby are subject to such legislation that's defined by the European Community and your relevant country. And the services that will be considered to be tappable are any services that go over the internet. Just some examples: surfing, email, chat, ICQ, voice over IP, FTP, telnet. This is relatively common sense. And what do you do when you are an intelligent criminal and you encrypt your traffic? And when we talk about secure email like PGP or when you're doing HTTPS or VPNs or using IP telephony phones like PGP phone, etc., if you're doing any of this stuff, it's pretty much too bad. If you are a communications provider that is providing the encryption service, so let's say you are providing SSL or if you're providing SSH, that means you are thereby responsible to either send that information that's being used with this encryption that you're providing, either decrypt it or, here's the scary part, you have to give your encryption keys over to the authorities. Yeah, that's real popular. So everything else, everything that doesn't fall under these two categories, when you're not doing your own encryption, if you know the user is doing it, then it's the problem for the law enforcement agency. And since some law enforcement agencies, like the NSA, claim they can totally crack PGP 512, or and 1024, I think, was the last thing I heard. If that's true, then, yeah, bye-bye to most encryption that you'll be using to protect your data. Okay, here's a quick logical overview of, and this is just a quick schematic drawing. And basically, the reason that I'm doing this is to kind of show you in what domain or where the responsibility falls of actually conducting the interception. So does anybody have a pointer, like a little blue pointery thingy? No? Okay, I don't either. All right, the little screen on top, the laptop, if that's the user, regardless of the connection that you're coming up over, DSL or dial-up, that usually is still the responsibility of a telco domain or of a sublease domain or a third-party provider, whomever. Regardless of the connection that you're using, you're still coming up over a relative PSTN cloud, and then you go from the telco domain across to an ISP domain. Oh, you have a pointer. Ooh, and I spilled water. Thank you. Okay, so let's say that you're coming in over this connection, and this whole area is the PSTN domain, which is like owned by a telco or sub-telcos or people who are providing the service. That's very nice, but this is how the connection comes over. Then, across here, there will be some, like let's just say you have, I don't know, you're leasing dial-ups from Colt, whomever. And then you have an ISP that is sitting on this area. This is the arena that is defined as the responsible party for conducting the interception. So if you're actually at this layer, this is what pretty much everyone considers as the responsible layer for actually doing the tap. That means that there's a really scary little red box sitting here that is capturing the radius traffic. So let's say that the user, who is the very nice man with the pointer, that he gave me, yeah, he's the bad guy, he's the criminal. So, sorry, but I need somebody. So, let's just say that he's, I don't know, what would you like to do? Would you like to sell drugs, trade arms, whatever? You're doing something really bad. And then I know, I've then been asked by a really nice government guy to put a tap on him. So when he logs on, I get a radius log on notification to this little box, and then this, or boxes, it doesn't matter. And then from there, the box starts the tap. The box will start the tap at the highest layer that he can, not at the lowest layer, but at the highest layer. This is an important distinction. So you're not tapping on the line. You're tapping for TCP/IP traffic. Okay? So we're not talking here about blind copy forward. We're not talking about anything. Right now we're talking about a full SMTP tap off of the mail server. So all SMTP traffic that comes off of here goes back to my box, gets sent from my box over a separate connection through the internet, which is also very interesting, to the National Secret Service, Civilian Police, or International Secret Service, depending on how you're working. Yeah? So, and some of the, there's a hell of a lot of problems with this. I mean, it works. They claim that it all works perfectly, happy, hunky-dory, but there are issues with reliability, with connectivity, with being able to do a traffic analysis, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. Can I just use this for the rest of the talk? Would you like to sit on the table? All right, so what are the technical challenges that come up under such a drawing? Well, the first technical challenge is it's a requirement, and it's maintaining the transparency and the standard of the communication. So let's say I'm getting all this stuff, and he's like, all right, start trading arms with Osama. And then instead of getting the rest of the message, you know, because of a bad, crappy T1 link, I get Osama... who's in that? George Bush, you know, like Osama Bush or something. Some ridiculousness. But basically that the standard of communication has to be kept relevantly high. If I'm doing 150 taps over a single ISP, highly unlikely, but let's say, then I want all that data, all that tapping information to come through. Otherwise, I might as well chuck it all. So it's that issue. It's also the issue that, let's say he has a really great link. Let's say he's got... How many? What, do you want to talk about Kim Lane? No. Okay. Let's say he has a really excellent link. Let's say he has two T3s, yeah? And he's using his, or not T3s, I shouldn't say that, but he has a hell of a possibility to send a lot of traffic. If he sends a lot of traffic and he bursts and peaks and da-da-da-da-da, you shouldn't be able to see, if you're monitoring the law enforcement side, when you send a lot of traffic, oh, hey, look, they're sending a lot of traffic too. You shouldn't be able to do any kind of correlation or traffic analysis based on an intercept party's traffic and the traffic that's being sent to the LEMF. Is this clear? I get a lot of faces looking at me like, what? Yeah.
Could you get a little closer to the microphone, please?
All right, speaking to the microphone once again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry. Okay, but was that clear what I just said before? With volume? Yeah, okay. The other issue is identifying the target. You cannot miss a single radius log on. You cannot miss a single radius log off. Because let's just say you handed out your IP address and you handed it out to him. 5 seconds later, he logs off, and now the radius is now handed the IP address that he was using over to the guy in the red shirt. Now we're monitoring his traffic. That's not only illegal, because we don't have a warrant for that, but it's also completely useless evidence. So he could be the child pornographer, and meanwhile we think it's him. Bad, bad story. But this kind of stuff happens all the time, so this is quite an issue. You have to have really good equipment. It's highly complex, and this is a problem. And another technical challenge is actually capturing all of that intercept information. Primarily, the vendors who are using the equipment are trying to do all of the interception on hardware, not on software, because it's supposed to be more efficient. But that means the hardware you're using to actually capture all the data has to be really good and capture it all. It has to apply a filter for that IP address in time. It has to make sure that none of the packets are lost, that it's got full... If you're using a Cisco, you should start praying. Because it's just not going to work. You're not going to be able to capture all the traffic and send it out and do the things you need to do for the intercept unless your hardware is reliable, which much hardware isn't. And the other issue is, this is something that ETSI is still discussing, is how to do packet reassembly. There are, for the sake of ease of use for the LEMF, there are people who claim to do packet reassembly of, say, an email. So it's a point-and-click kind of thing. You know, you reassemble all the packets. You just send out, a nicely formatted email directly to the LEMF rather than sending out just the raw TCP information. And this is an issue. This is not something that they've been significantly able to solve with all different kinds of traffic. So this is one. And email intercept, they call it TCP sequencing, and it's basically protocol reassembly, but this is what I was just talking about with the previous one. It's just not working the way it should. And there are vendors who claim that they have it all working nicely, but I haven't seen it, so... and one of the things... have you guys ever heard of Steve Belevin? No? Okay. Well, he was one of the people that testified before the U.S. Congress concerning Carnivore, and one of the reasons why it sucked... One of the reasons why it sucked was because it was so unbelievably buggy, and it was unbelievably buggy because they wanted it to do everything except act as a refrigerator. You know, it was one of the worst things that was written in the United States for doing this kind of task. And, so all of this different software, it has to do a hell of a lot of work to actually capture, process, and forward the data. And as it gets more complex, it gets more buggy. And because none of it is open source, it just, you know, it can have massive holes and you would never know. And the last issue was the issue of maintaining the standard of communication. There has to be peering arrangements set up with the LEMF at the last point when you hand over all the traffic. And those peering arrangements, in actual implementation, have not been what they should have been. So a lot of operators complain about having very low lines so that the other side complains of, oh, we missed this or we missed that, etc. So those peering arrangements are just not properly arranged. How does it start in the EU? The legal basis was a EU directive. Germany is a signatory to the Council on Cybercrime, which pretty much, with two articles, Article 20 and 21, ask not only for the real-time collection of all traffic, but also the interception of the collection data. So the user evidence, etc., all the other subsequent evidence that needs to be done for interception, that was all arranged when you sign this COE article. And of course, there are secondary laws and secondary regulations in each European country. So one of the primary differences in the EU is you should know that interception in the EU is just not carnivore, or not carnivore-based or CALIA standard-based. It's supposed to be completely different. Because CALIA is also one of those arrangements where you have an open black hole and you have no idea what the government party is doing on your network, who they're tapping, when, how long, etc. And the other issue is that it is trying to be a real standards, a best practices-based approach. They really want to do the right thing, at least that's what they say. So they are going back to the IETF standpoint on wiretapping, which is we're not going to build wiretapping or any kind of interception facility into our protocols because that will or may significantly weaken the protocol itself. And Europe has completely agreed with this. They are not going to mandatorily base anything into an area that could make other traffic that's supposed to be secure more vulnerable. So this is a little bit in conflict with Data Protection Act and Data Privacy Acts, but they're trying to manage it in the most responsible way. Okay, so how does it look in brief? I have 2 points for Germany and for the UK, and it's basically that Germany has no obligation for a permanent solution, so it doesn't have to be always on, but they do want an automated solution. And the question is, can that automated solution be flexible? I have on here yes, but when I spoke to some other people, they claimed that it can't be a flexible solution and that G10 pretty much has full way in ISPs. That's why I want to know if there was anyone here from an ISP that knows differently, if they're using anything other than G10 to actually conduct the implementation. In Holland, the obligation for a permanent solution is there, and it's supposed to be a flexible solution as well. In the United Kingdom, it's the same situation. It has to be permanent, always on functionality, and it's not a flexible solution. So the government more or less mandates what is usable and what's not usable and approves them towards each ISP. Okay, France. I'm just going to give you this quickly because this is still boring. Basically, they have two pieces of European interception legislation. They've got this. It's a commission. It's called the CNCIS, Commission, blah, 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 blah. And it's based on this law. I can send you the presentation. You can look it up. Basically, what it says is this commission analyzes every single request for a wiretap. So it's supposed to be a government body still, but they're analyzing each request to make sure that request is legal, that it's okay, and then they put the request into working by a relevant ISP. They were getting the highest amount of wiretaps ever was last year, something like 23,000 wiretaps done, you know, in 6 months or something. And the loi sur la sûreté, let me massacre French, the loi for the general security, which was done in November 2001, was a response to, September 11th, and it is very strict, and it basically increases the ability of law enforcement to start conducting interceptions. And it says facilitates, but what it means is it's warrantless interception for certain cases of terrorism or suspected terrorism. So when they think that you're doing cyber terrorism, they're going to intercept you. So all of those of you who hack, websites for political reasons, that falls under cyber terrorism. And in Germany, the G10 law, which you probably know more about than I do. By the way, is this the right translation that I have here? Gazettes for blah, blah, blah? Yeah? Okay. Okay. But the G10 law, which was done in 2001, was done to specify how interception would occur at the different communications providers. But what increased the power of the G10 and the applicability of the G10 law in terms of how you can use it and where you can use it was the Counterterrorism Act of January 2002. And this is the same situation of warrantless wiretaps. So without going to a judge or a court order, for certain situations you can get wiretapped without any subsequent justifying information whatsoever. And I think Berlin was one of the people who are objecting for, I read something about a court case for privacy that they were objecting to the applicability of the Counterterrorism Act. Does anyone know that? Or okay. But in any case, let's talk about G10. The way that they do it. By the way, all of this information is not stolen. You can find it on the website. Go to g10.de and you'll see it as well. Basically, the way it works is it seems to have a multifunctional capability. It seems to be able to act as a line interceptor, so a direct tap off of the PSTN line, or they have here the network access server, but I don't really believe that. So according to this, it will be at the relevant PSTN point of presence. They claim that it's not PSTN point of presence, but according to this diagram, it is. So they're actually on the physical wire. They're on the physical wire to do the intercept by your house, so it's a clip-clip device on the line. And then from there, it goes directly to their monitoring server. And the same situation for the DISLAM here they have it between the DISLAM and the ATM switch. Well, it's still a line intercept. Which is different than what I showed you before, because the previous diagram that I showed you is not at that low layer. It's happening at a much higher layer. And the previous diagram is based on ETSI standards. So although if you look on the G10 website, they say that they're part of ETSI and that they are trying to comply with ETSI protocols, they're not if you look at this. Because ETSI says that the responsibility or where the intercept happens is not supposed to be at that low layer. It's supposed to be at that higher layer. And here it's not. So what they're also doing, and when you see, I'm not even sure if this is what I think it is, but it says span router. If they're talking about spanning, you know, like copying information from one hardware port to another hardware port, that's also not going with what ETSI recommends. They're not recommending that you do it that way. So, and in the Netherlands, it is not done that way. With a majority of the implementations that I know, it's done with hardware splitters. So I'm not verifying that this happens at every implementation, but the span router is, think about it. You're using, how many of you have used Cisco's? Okay. Now, you guys know the set switch port span. I can't remember the command exactly. But, okay, when you do that, it doesn't get all of the information across the other port. You're not getting all the traffic. So, I mean, this if this is what I think it is from G10 and all I have is this, then this won't work very well for very long. Which is good news for us. So basically, the DCFD is Data Capture Filtering Device, and there's a filter that's set between the application server and the gateway, and this is how it is done in Holland. So this is at the higher layer. So if they are doing this, that means they're doing like pretty much everything. They're saying, we're not going to make a choice about how to intercept, since ETSI hasn't made a full choice about how to intercept. So we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, the new-fashioned way, any old way we like, and we're not going to be vendor-dependent, they claim. But if they say things like span router, they already are. And they're going to make it available to pretty much every ISP from the authority of the government. I'm not sure how their funding is arranged. I'm not sure if they're a government agency. Does anybody know this stuff?
G10 is a company.
Yeah?
That is a private company. They want you to outsource. If you're an ISP and you have to comply with the G10 law in Germany, G10, the company, provides the services to the ISP. The ISP has to be in compliance with the law. Mm-hmm. And G10 offers the opportunity for the ISP to get rid of this
obligation.
Obligation by outsourcing the complete interception services to the G10, the company. They bill you because the ISP is responsible for providing the interception service, has to bear the cost, and they're providing the data to the government.
Okay. You don't work for G10, do you?
Huh?
You don't work for G10.
No, I've been in Frankfurt at a meeting arranged by this, not just by the provider interest group.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
And there were three different
vendors
who presented their solutions for lawful interception. One of them was G10.
Who were the other two?
I don't recall the names, but I've got a protocol of the meeting and I can look it up. Another one was providing a solution that was scalable and actually functional. It was pretty scary because they provided you with you also saw the interface, the interested parties had to view the traffic. They present you with a kind of tree view, like an Explorer, but with timestamps. If you unfold this, you see the protocols, and when you click at the, for example, HTTP session, you see each page that has been downloaded and the unvisited links in blue, the visited links in red, so that you can follow the session in timely order. even with images and everything, and if there was an interrupted download, you see a partial JPEG image and things like that. There was a third company which originally made network probes and network monitors for debugging networks, and who were starting to go into the lawful interception business. They didn't have any working solution to offer. They were just offering plans for their future business and invited the providers to
help them
ask what solution they needed. There were also providers who stated what kind of need they have. Mm-hmm. And there were a few people from, I think it was Cable and Wireless, who stated what kind of traffic demands they have. So if a node is to be intercepted, it's several times 622 megabit per second that has to be intercepted. No lawful interception provider at the moment can handle this amount of traffic. Reliably. Not even close. 155 and it's over.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are just issues that, you know, very often lawful interception providers, especially like the last one you mentioned, they will go to an ISP and say, look, it's great. You're doing something that we've never heard of and nobody else does. That's great. We'll figure it out and we'll work on an intercept solution with you. And then based on that, we will fund ourselves and then go on further. I'm going to kind of speed it up a little bit because I see I only have 20 minutes left. This is the portion of the G10 that's provided for the law enforcement side, because there's two sides to this solution. One side is used by the operator, the other side is used by law enforcement. So this is what G10 provides for the law enforcement ability, and they say this is passive monitoring. So this is also scary, which means when it's passive, by the way, it requires absolutely zero intervention from an ISP or any other communications provider. They have probes or sensors. Am I doing this? They have probes or sensors sitting on the network of the different internet providers or mobile operators or PSTN operators. These probes just sit and collect at any time, at any day, for whomever, whichever subject. That's scary. One thing quickly about UK interception legislation. If you want this presentation, I can send it to you by email. Just come up here. I'll give you a card. This is the UK Home Secretary, and he made a little blah blah on the MI5 homepage, and basically all he's saying is, thank God for September 11th, because now finally we can justify doing as much interception as we always did. And the UK has two subsequent forms of legislation that provide for interception function, and that's the REPA Act, Regulation of Investigatory Powers, and the Anti-Terrorism, Crime and Security Act. Be afraid of the second one, because this looks like an example that's going to follow forth onto the continent. The case in the Netherlands. Well, the Netherlands claims to be at the forefront, both legally and technically, for having the most amount of legislation concerning all the specific aspects of interception, as well as technically in terms of implementation of all of these different things, because they have a full IP tap available and in use by the authorities and of the ISPs. The Dutch Telecommunication Act defined what the operator responsibilities would be, so that everybody who had public communications would have to then also provide interception functionality. The Code of Criminal Proceedings basically says how the law enforcement agencies have to go about actually starting an intercept and then handling the intercept through different organizations. Because if you're just Mr. Policeman, you can't just go and ask for an intercept. You have to go through the proper channels, etc. That's what this code determined. And then they have the Special Investigation Powers Act, which kind of facilitates, I'll use that word again, criminal investigation methods. And basically it specifies how the government can also work with private individuals to obtain and manage the intercept information they have, because let's face it, I mean, most policemen are not network experts. And also what they did was, organizationally, they provided for the Landelijke Interceptie Organisatie, which is the National Interception Office, and it should be in operation at the end of this year. I think it already is. And prior to that, or was established, the CIOT, which is from all the telecom providers or all telecom operators. They have a separate office that's going to be managing and maintaining how operators comply and go about implementing interception legislation. Okay, I'm really going to go over this fast, so if you have questions, please ask them. This is really a complicated, horrible diagram, but if I can just quickly go over it. You have this internal intercept functions, which is a way that they defined how content of communication and the internet intercept-related information is handled. And they've defined three parties that are actually conducting it. And there's the network provider has an administrative function. There's a mediation functioning happening for actually placing the intercept request. And then there's a content mediation function, which is handling that captured content. The way that it goes over from the network provider domain to the law enforcement domain is identified by these three very important acronyms, HI1, HI2, and HI3. HI1 is how they handle all that administrative stuff, so the warrant, the encryption keys that will be used, etc. And the intercept relation information is the stuff that happens per the overhead for each intercept, checksums, etc. The HI3 will be actually the total content of communication. So this is the way that the ETSI group has defined how interception happens and what the different functionality are. Okay, I have a little blah blah. ETSI standardization, it's clear. Basically, the idea is that despite the disparity or heterogeneous environments of different operators, it should all go over, all the intercept information should go over in a common way to a law enforcement management facility. It's for interoperability. That's all it's for. That's really what the handover protocol is for, and it's for interoperability at the national level, at the regional level, and at the European level. Formally, ETSI was called under the Technical Committee for Security Group, Security of LI, and now it's just ETSI UTC LI. It's a separate committee. They're going to have this handover spec ready by April 2003, and this is probably what G10 is waiting for on their website before they actually decide to comply. And primarily, the ETSI group is operators and vendors, so people who are interested in making and selling this stuff and people who actually have to implement. And there are, of course, some government officials, but you don't really talk to them. And then one of the things, if you guys want to download this, is the ETSI TR101944. It's the technical report from ETSI. It's not a standard. It's a report concerning the issues. It's a pretty good document. And what the document says is it defines several things. It defines who's responsible. It defines a five-layer model for network level and service level divisions to define responsibilities and functions. And then it has samples for implementation architectures for telephone, DSL, local area networks, etc., what to do if you don't have a permanent IP address and what to do if you do. And it talks about security aspects of the whole interception functionality and how to actually accomplish HI3 delivery. Okay, I have some stuff about 3GPP and GPRS, but I don't think I have much time, so I'm going to let you download this for me if you're really interested. Basically, same basic functionality applies, except the 3GPP groups for ETSI are much further than the IP groups. So they have a lot more already defined. One of the things that you should know is the majority of vendors are already ready. So interception capabilities on mobile is just far more advanced than and ready and capable than interception abilities or fixed. Okay, the Dutch have the standard. It's called the TIT, but that's the rude way of calling it, but that's really what they say. But there's a TIIT, and it's the technical implementation standard, and basically it's a real spec. It's a spec that defines how to actually do a full IP and email tap. They have the same description of the handover interface, but there are some things I can tell you. The methods of doing over the handover one, which is the actual administrative information, you know, to start the whole intercept. It depends on the law enforcement agency, but what you should know is that this HI1 is actually a sneaker network. So there's a CD-ROM with the intercept request, the keys, digital signatures from the judge, etc. This gets then, you know, walked over to the ISP, sneaker network. They hand it over to the ISP guy. The ISP guy loads the CD-ROM in. He has all the information necessary to start up the intercept, and then he carries it out. And then the HI2 and the HI3 is the actual stuff that's being sent over the wire. Okay, what do I want to tell you? Right. There's also in the TIIT a general description of architecture of how to actually do the implementation, and then there's a handover interface specification. Although it's provided for in the Netherlands, it's not European-wide yet. This is why the ETSI April report is so important. So let's look at the TIIT. Basically, you have the law enforcement agency asking for an LI order. The LI order goes over to a warrant administration desk. It's like a big, you know, cyber cop desk. And then the cyber cop desk gets it over to, like, there might be another layer here. There might be a telco warrant desk where there's, for the case of KPN in the Netherlands, who has four telcos and controls, I'm sorry, yeah, three, no, four, not three. All right, oops. But they control the market share of all the ISP activity in the Netherlands, so they have to organize which where the intercept request goes, to which ISP. So then it finally gets out to the ISP. The ISP puts it into this S3. The S3 is not defined in the TIAT, but let's just say it's a management box that starts setting up the intercept. And then what it does is you have different S1s actually doing the collection, and they gather all the information from the relevant areas, from the radio server, mail, etc., a core router that's going to the internet, wherever the primary bulk traffic is happening for that user. It'll collect the information from there, pop it out to the S2, which is then gathering all of that information and then forwarding it over to the law enforcement over the internet, let me add, over the internet. And this is where you have HI2 and HI3 information, and it forwards it over to the T1s. The T1s are the law enforcement management facilities boxes, collection boxes, you know, big mailboxes, really. And then they subdivide them into the different T2s, which are Secret Service, Civil Police, et cetera, et cetera. Is that clear? Any questions so far? Yeah. Actually, yeah.
You said that the ISP may not know who is actually intercepted, but when you say the ISP has something like a clearing desk, then he knows who.
Yes.
Is.
When I say I didn't say the ISP may not know, because in order to carry out the actual intercept, because you need to do correlation between a username and a real name, for example, because some warrants will not have all of the information. The warrant should have that information already. There should have been a information asking warrant asking for a correlation between username and real name. Once you get that name address information, then their warrant is issued, and the ISP has to know that. So the ISP will know under which username the warrant is being asked. So there's usually a security officer. All of these people are screened and vetted, etc. And I was just looking at the G10 website a little while ago, and they were saying that they provide all of those services for you. So scary as that is, the G10 organization will also screen your staff, do the vetting, do the little professional consultation that's necessary to set this up. Yes?
The traffic from S2 to T1, yeah. Will it be encrypted again?
Yes. Yes.
And
no, you know what? It's done in clear text. You can all pick it up now. Of course not. Yes, of course it's encrypted. Duh. Sorry, I'm kidding. But okay. So let's look again. So the S1, what does it do? It intercepts the target traffic. It timestamps the targeted packets. Depending on the distance and relative location of the S1 and S2, there will also be another encryption layer there between the S1 and S2. It generates a SHA-hash over the first 64 target packets. If there's less than 64 target packets, there will be a SHA-hash, and if there's more than 64, it gets buffered, and then the next one happens. It gets encrypted with a key specific for that interception, which is then handed over by that initial... Jesus, I can't believe I'm getting called. By that initial HI1. It's then sent to the S2. The S2 gathers it all up and then pops it out over the internet to the T1. Okay, I didn't mention this. All right. It's supposed to be a tunnel encryption that's happening from the S2 to the T1. The T1 IP addresses can vary in range. I only have 10 minutes left. Damn it. And they use X509 certificates. All right, the S3, I already told you it's not on the T, it's management, because in Holland they are also saying that the ISPs that are conducting the interception also get money for the amount of intercepts they connect and et cetera. So they collect all that info, pops it over to the government, sends them a nice little bill, thank you, you know. And the T1s, we don't know enough about the T1s. You want to know more. But basically, they end the IPsec connection channel or TLS or SSL, whatever the hell they're using, and then they forward the data over to the T2s. So that, you know, for the relevant government authority that asked for the interception, because it could be that there's a party in the T1 on top that's then monitoring a party at the T1 on the bottom. And you don't want them to know about each other. And you don't want them to know if there's multiple intercepts asked by two different agencies. So it's not a very efficient system, but it's a super secret system, just the way they like it. So the T2 then decrypts the packet from the S1, checks the integrity, and passes it on. Okay, quickly, LI implementations. I'm just going to go to it. There are three different types of implementation techniques that are defined. You can find them on the internet as well. There's active, semi-active, and passive. The issue here is very simple. Active means it's on the box. You know, it's happening right there. It's really invasive. It hurts a network. It's ouchy, ouchy. And no network administrator in the right mind really prefers this approach. It's an active approach. Semi-active means that there's some modicum of interaction between the radio server to capture and filter the traffic, and it does it per IP address, passes it on. Passive, this is what I was telling you the G10 LEMF box does, which is no interaction whatsoever with the ISP, and it's only an interception point for the law enforcement device. Read their website, because this is exactly what the G10 says. Okay? And most of the following vendors that I'm going to show you now are a combination of active or semi-active implementation. Verint, they changed their name. They used to be called Converse Infosys. Probably the biggest reason they changed their name was because of, I'm going to say this word, speculation and rumor. This is not confirmed, but the speculation and rumor is that they have Mossad ties, that they're being funded for 95% of their budget by the Israeli government, and that they are using their equipment to monitor and tap the United States government, the FBI and CIA, because the FBI and CIA use Converse. Converse is also being used by the Dutch authorities and has come under heavy attack for the last couple of months for these issues, also the issues that it's like really a weak point in the whole monitoring domain, that it's also, it's not just a weak point for the fact that from the Mossad, because at least the Mossad is another government agency, but it's also a general weak point that it's totally open, the people can get into it, etc. It's used really extensively internationally because they had a big contract in the States, because they have a big contract in other places. A lot of countries around Europe are using Converse technology. They're using a switch. They're using the top layer switch. How many of you are familiar with that? Okay. It's supposed to do layer 7 application-based interception and reassembly. Wow. It sounds good, but I don't know. ADC is SSH. This is primarily used for satellite connections. It's totally used for proprietary hardware. You have no idea what kind of black box stuff that they're using. They're using this for large bandwidth. I know for a fact that it's sitting in Germany somewhere because Germany was using SSH for quite some time for international traffic that was flowing across borders. It does support CLIA. It does support SE, and they're also using our top layer switch. Accuris. Some limitations, they have a maximum of 50 concurrent taps. This is from their first release until now. They're also going a little bit bankrupt, but that's debatable. The solution is not supposed to be dependent on switch type, but they do have preferences. I think it's for, but it's supposed to not be dependent on switch type. They can use one S2 as a concentrator. So basically, if you have a multi-European ISP, you have a lot of S1s all over the place, one S2 as a concentrator, it's cheaper. And they are supposed to offer a gigabit solution. It depends on the switch capability and the integration with setting the filters, because the filters are supposed to have a 15-second delay before they can be set. 15 seconds is too long from a radius authentication to collecting the traffic to being sent out again. So this is an issue. And they also are supposed to support CLIA and ETSI. Finally, it all comes down to the money. These solutions can bankrupt an ISP, potentially. The solutions can cost anywhere between 100,000 to 700,000 euro per ISP. There are also other companies, you know, there are small groups that are willing to charge less, but this is a really expensive proposition. The United Kingdom government expected to spend $46 billion over the next 5 years, and then they later, after giving a lot of flack in the media, they reduced it to $27 billion. But that's a hell of a lot of money, and I know that's not all for a switch and a splitter. So... And the division of costs. This is an issue that's under subsequent discussion in a lot of European countries. Who's going to spend the money? Is the ISP going to spend the money to set it up, or is the government going to spend the money because they so want to tap you? And sometimes the costs are divided. Sometimes it's 40-60. Sometimes all the CapEx, which is the situation in Holland, all the capital expenditure is going to be done by the ISP, so they'll put the whole thing together. And then every time they have an intercept, they make a little deal with the government about how much that costs. So it could be that the ISP actually has to gain from conducting intercepts. How scary is that? the penalties for non-compliance. You have in Holland fines that go up to 250,000 euros. There are civil charges that can be brought against the management of the ISP, and they can house arrest your CEO. No MTV for him, you know, no ISP. And he'll have to sit at home, and he can't go to work until they implement an infrastructure. Okay, co-op, isn't that great about Holland that they can do that? Okay, all right. No cheers for Holland in the room? I can't believe it. All right, cooperation between ISPs to choose a single LI tool. Every time that they tried that, it keeps falling on its face. There's a group called NLIP, and they really, really tried hard. It's like the same kind of group what you were talking about. It's a cooperation between different ISPs, and Zonnet, which is a popular ISP in Holland, had to pay those fines of $250,000, almost went bankrupt. So they said, okay, we're going to do a solution together with a couple of guys to reduce our costs. Just didn't work. Okay. Conclusions for law enforcement. Yeah, this is really simple. If they're going to do it at all, might as well start out the right way. You just have to... Okay, well, this is not just my view. There are people actually at the NSA who even believe this. Disclose what your tools are. Disclose your methods. Adherence to warrant submissions. Make sure you fill in those warrants properly and you're not trying to tap any nice guys. Completeness of logs and supporting info, they don't do this. They don't try to prove non-contamination of data. Basic forensic stuff, they don't do. And they're very bad at maintaining relationships with the private sector because that's where they really get their expertise. There's not enough expertise in law enforcement to fully be able to support the technical knowledge necessary to analyze such data. Law enforcement personnel, therefore, training. This is like a speech for law enforcement. Training, defining the role of police investigators, civil technicians, multifocal. Because let's admit it. I mean, there are some bad guys among all of the hundreds of intercept traffic people. There's probably one or two, and that's low. But still, if they're going to analyze this data at all, don't you want to be more comfortable knowing that they do it right? And future development and issues. EU expansion means that all those nice countries that are fringing, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, etc., they're also going to be doing this soon. So you want them to know that they also have to do it against certain requirements. Data retention decisions, I don't know if you saw the talk yesterday. This is another issue that concerns LI interception. One of the things that's a forensic issue is when you do capture it over and when you do generate a hash, shouldn't the ISP keep the hash? Because right now the ISP is not allowed to retain any of the data that they do for interception, but it could be a requirement later when verifying the accuracy of the information that the government's using. Use that hash that you send over in your 64 packets and keep it at the ISP. Retain that data so that when it comes to court, you can prove that the data that they collected wasn't tampered with. Okay, this is not being done now, but something to think about. Borderless LI, that's exactly what's going to happen in Europe. Redefining the ISP role, exactly what they should be capable of. You know, how many security officers do know about your intercepts? These are all questions that should be answered. Wireless LANs. If you're setting up a wireless LAN at home for you and your buddies, or if there's the little chaos computer mobile walking around with a wireless LAN all over Berlin, are they subject to interception requirements? Okay, and what is the future then of privacy legislation when we're talking about this kind of stuff? I have some websites for you. Come to me later. You'll definitely get them. So I know that we don't have time for this, but I wanted to ask you some questions. Maybe there are things that you can think about. Does lawful interception actually deliver any added value to law enforcement's ability to protect our citizens? Do you feel safer knowing that they're able to intercept? What do you guys think about open interception tools, open source, so that you know exactly what they're capable of, you can find out the weak spots, and you know that if they intercept you, that they're not getting you for something you never did? Should there be a return of the Clipper chip? What do you think? Should there be mandated key escrow? I'm sure this is not popular. And what types of oversight do you think need to be built into such a system? Because we're not going to get rid of it. So what needs to be built into it to prevent it from being abused by everyone and their mother? And on that note, thank you.